The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Gangsters, what's up, guys?
Kenny Florian.
Oh, my God!
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Yes, we are live. You think our buddy Bruce Buffer will sue me? I know he'll sue me if I say it's time for the Anik and Florian Podcast, but do you think he'll sue me if I say we are live? What do you think, Flo?
Great. So we got to get lawyered up right now. Thanks.
We do.
There goes all our money from the podcast, and we got to defend ourselves against the beast, Bruce Buffer.
That is the whole kitty. Tell our producer Danny Mayock that he's coming for her too. I heard her say we are live.
It's time to lawyer up.
It is. Yeah, it is. Oh, that's good. It is Monday, December 17th, 2018, episode 184 of the Anik and Florian Podcast. It always sounds like a lot. So in our little pre-show meeting that lasts 4 minutes, I try not to, you know, spoil anything I might have, right? So I'm at Publix this morning, right? Mm. It's a grocery store here in South Florida. I'm there with my son, Hunter, just him and me. You know, I got him in the car seat in the grocery cart.
Okay.
And who do I run into? But former UFC light heavyweight champion Sugar Rashad Evans.
Oh, wow.
I mean, what are the fucking odds, kid? This tiny little awesome Publix in West Boca Raton. I just went in to get a few things. You know, my wife was at my daughter's school doing lunch duty. In and out, Sugar Rashad Evans live and in color.
He's the best.
What's unbelievable.
Where'd you bump into him? What aisle?
That's a good question. It was in the produce aisle.
Okay.
He was, loading up on the healthy stuff, and good. I was looking for just probably like a bag of lettuce shreds iceberg to put on my like turkey sub or something. No. But yeah, he was getting some mangoes from Haiti or something. But it was cool to run into Rashad. You just never know how your day is going to go down.
Awesome.
So and you just never know how these fights are going to go down. Before we get into Fox UFC Fight Night Milwaukee, so three more shows for us here on Fox. Final UFC Fight Night on Fox was this past weekend, and UFC 232 is obviously going to be the last sort of coexisting show for Fox and the UFC. The FS1 UFC 232 prelims will be that night on FS1. Ken Flo, you're working the desk, right? So even though a lot of the goodbyes happened, UFC tonight had the last show, and Milwaukee was pretty emotional for a lot of people. I think December 29th is going to be even harder for all these people that we will get to in a couple weeks on our final show, who have devoted 7 years of their life to this, Ken Flo.
Yeah.
You saw some of those emotions spilling over a little bit. And I think just my biggest takeaway, even though it's sad and you know, the relationships will withstand the test of time, but these people love mixed martial arts now, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it's ripped from them unless they want to, like, leave Fox and go try to work for the UFC and work in mixed martial arts. And when you get the bug for this sport, you kind of want it to be in your life forever, right? I got the bug in 07 and sort of kind of wanted this sport to be in my life forever. And it's for a lot of these people, you know, even some of the producers on this podcast, I'd imagine, you know, it's going to be a different ballgame here in a couple weeks. And it's unfortunate.
Well, dude, I think you nailed it. I mean, there's a lot of lifelong mixed martial arts UFC fans now that have been created over at Fox Sports. And I can't thank them enough for all of their support and everything they've helped me with and all the reps that I got working for them. And, you know, I think that they elevated this sport to a whole new level over here, and they treated it along the likes of Major League Baseball and the NFL. And because they gave us that kind of treatment, and they gave, you know, the people who worked on that show that kind of treatment, I think they elevated the sport as a whole, and I'm eternally grateful.
Yeah, man, you put it well. And it's hard to quantify how many more American MMA fans there are because of this Fox relationship. I don't even think it always shows up in the television rating necessarily. But FS1 has been a channel largely devoted to the UFC since 2013. And that relationship obviously goes both ways. But it's a special time. We're all trying to go out on a high note. And you can be sure on our final episode here on Fox Sports, which is December 31st. Just before the new year, we will acknowledge everybody that we can think of by name, and inevitably we'll leave some people out. So today, in about 10 minutes, will be the biggest Ray Longo minute that we have ever had in the history of this podcast. I texted him this morning. I've never been more excited to talk to Ray. So this podcast launched, Kenny, April 6, 2015. So in the 4 years almost that have expired since, this, in my opinion, is the biggest win for Ray Longo as a chief corner in that time. I mean, Chris Weidman had a big one against Kelvin Gastelum, some others that we'll get to with Ray, but this is a huge moment for our guy, and certainly I want the shine to be on Ally Aquinta, but for Ray, this is going to be an exciting day and week for him to celebrate this win, because I don't know that a lot of people consider Raging Ally Quinton an elite fighter, someone capable of winning a UFC lightweight championship or challenging for it. And I think based upon the 25 minutes that I saw, you know, being front and center this weekend, I think Ally Quinton has crossed that line and deserves all the credit for what he was able to do in winning that fight against Kevin Lee.
No doubt about it. Very happy for Ray Longo and Matt Serra, you know, two guys who really believed in Ally Quinton from the beginning. And you saw that star potential on The Ultimate Fighter, your season of The Ultimate Fighter, by the way. And, you know, the way that he was moving and the way he was able to integrate everything together. So it's clear that he's well coached. And, you know, I think this was that fight that proved that he is truly elite. Beating a number four guy, a guy in Kevin Lee, who's a tough style matchup for him, I think proved that he is one of the top lightweights in the UFC. I think we always knew that he was one of the toughest, that he had elite toughness in the UFC. But, you know, the fact that he was able to show some phenomenal skills out there against a Kevin Lee who was putting a lot of pressure on him, it showed that, you know, just like he did in the Khabib Nurmagomedov fight, he knows how to come back from adversity. And he's one of the few guys, I think, in the UFC in general, who knows how to adjust mid-fight. And Ally Quinta is an absolute beast. He came roaring back to win that fight, and I was really, really happy for him.
And his coaches really did an outstanding job, and we may not be the most objective when it comes to Ray and Matt, but Longo's message leading into round four, Matt Serra's message leading into round five, even when they kept it simple, I thought they were getting the right message out there. Yeah, Al was challenged in a number of different MMA capacities in this fight, and his submission defense not tested a ton, but certainly was tested. Takedown defense, his get-ups, everything else, the striking certainly was his for the most part on the feet. But cardio is king, right? Am I wrong? I mean, cardio is king. And I think for Al, the confidence really comes from the cardio. I know he's confident in his skills and in his mental capacity and ability, but he really could go 10 hard fives. So he knows when he gets to a certain point in the fight, it becomes his fight. And this one certainly became his fight.
I'd say conditioning is king, and also confidence is king. Your ability to stay composed in the octagon is huge. That was the difference for me in Ally Quinta. Kevin Lee, I thought, really got frustrated. You could see his face just totally change every time Ally Quinta was able to get back to his feet. When Al was able to avoid that back take from Kevin Lee, that choke, and when he was able to get on top, Kevin just, you could see the fight just kind of sap from every single time. And Ally Quinta just stayed completely composed. Every time he got back to his feet, he didn't look like he was tired. He didn't look like he was frustrated. It was Kevin Lee who looked like he was frustrated. I think that had an effect on his conditioning and his overall mind state throughout that fight. Ally Quinta, man, just an absolute beast. I think there's certain guys that are hammers and nails. Ally Quinta is that guy. I think for Kevin Lee, he needs to learn how to be the nail a little bit better. I don't think he was able to deal with the pressure that was put on him when it was Ally Quinta's turn to really start to hammer him.
So Kevin Lee said before the fight that mentally, if I stay in it, it's my fight. And I think what you're suggesting in some capacity is that he did allow that mental frustration to creep in, and that was a factor in the fight. But the physical was what caused that frustration, right? Or are you saying largely, though, at least that it was Al's fighting that led to that frustration or not?
It's hard to pinpoint. It's hard to pinpoint it. I think that I would probably lean towards the fact that I think Kevin Lee, with all of his experience, hasn't had to deal with a guy like Ally Quinta, who is like a Terminator, who can take shots and keep coming forward. I don't think he's had to deal with that. I think most of the guys that he's taken down have kind of just given the fight and kind of accepted that reality. Ally Quinta did not accept that reality. Again, it is really hard to pinpoint, but I would lean towards the fact that it was Ally Quinta's will that really won him that fight.
Yeah, we have a lot more to get to, obviously, on Ally Quinta's performance with Ray, and certainly we'll talk about Kevin Lee in terms of spinning it forward and his suggestion that maybe his days at lightweight are done. But in terms of spinning this thing forward for Raging Ally Quinta, when you look at the rankings, you got Khabib Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson at the top, the champion and the number one contender. And I kind of just want to proceed as if those two guys are fighting, even though I know Ally Quinta likes the Tony Ferguson matchup set after the fight. He thinks he can beat him, thinks he can put him away. Kind of want to proceed for our purposes as if Tony's going to fight Khabib, because I'll get down on one knee and pray that's just the fight that needs to happen. McGregor and Poirier are 2-3, Kenny. I know there's some steam for that rematch. Dana White has publicly said that that makes sense to do that fight right now. Kevin Lee, number 4. Edson Barboza, who we will get to, number 5. Justin Gaethje, number 6. Showtime Pettis, number 7. And Ally Quinta, number 8. So, I don't know. A lot of people think the Justin Gaethje fight makes sense. Gaethje immediately took to Twitter and called for that matchup after the Ally Quinta result this weekend. What would you like to see for Al in terms of turning this thing around?
Gaethje, Ally Quinta would be an absolute classic. I don't think there's any other way that that wouldn't be an insane fight for the fans to watch. It'd be very, very exciting, no doubt about that. But, hey, why can't Ally Quinta fight Conor? I think that's that's an interesting fight as well. I think you have two guys who recently lost to Khabib Nurmagomedov. Ally Quinta went 5 rounds. Conor did not. Ally Quinta's very hungry right now. He's a guy that I think has kind of creeped in to become this kind of blue-collar star now in the UFC's 155-pound division. Why not?
No, I think that has legs. I didn't think about that. I think for all of these guys now collected in this mix, and you can include Ally Quinta in it now, you know, the calendar might just align, Flo, where April, May, June, we're seeing a lot of these guys compete in a similar time frame. Lightweight is strong. A lot of interesting possibilities. You know, I would think as a promoter, you're sort of salivating now. But Kevin Lee is no longer in that mix. He came in number 4. Ally Quinta will replace him in the top 5. For Kevin Lee, Kenny, when you look at the welterweight rankings, right, and the possibility of him moving up, right, because some guys move up and they may not contend, right, but they just can't make 155 pounds anymore. And I think Michael Chiesa, when he moves up to welterweight, he understands what is in front of him in terms of trying to win a UFC welterweight championship, and that's why he stayed at 55. But you do have guys in the welterweight top 10 like Santiago Ponzinibbio, who in my mind seems just too big and too good for Kevin Lee, right, in terms of moving up. But then I see Jorge Masvidal at number 9 in the world. I see Neil Magny, Donald Cowboy Cerrone, Cowboy Oliveira, Eliseo Zaleski Dos Santos, even Gunnar Nelson, who's a smaller guy. You know, all those guys are ranked right now. Yeah. So in terms of Kevin Lee moving up, how competitive do you think he is in the bottom half of that welterweight top 15?
Can he do well? Absolutely. I just feel like there's a lot of Kevin Lees at welterweight, and I don't know if that's the best choice for him. Yes, he's one of the bigger guys at 155 pounds, but I think he nailed his last weight cut. I thought he looked great. And it's not like there's other guys like a Khabib Nurmagomedov, you know, he walks around just as big as Kevin Lee, in my opinion.
Yeah,
so
right.
I think Kevin could do it. It's going to take a little bit more discipline. He's going to have to be on his diet a little bit more. But I don't see a reason for him to go up to welterweight. Can he do well though, to answer your question? Sure.
Yeah. No, right. I think if you're preserving a championship aspiration, it's an easier path and less a career reset, right? Oftentimes you see guys go for the career reset, Gilbert Melendez, even Showtime Pettis, right? When they move down a division, it's for a career reset, you know. But Kevin Lee's 1-1 in his last 2 fights. He's entrenched in the top 10 in a division in which he has a reputation and some heat in some matchups with guys. So largely, I agree with you. I guess I just feel like a lot of fighters, as we've said on the show the past few weeks, they have a great weight cut in a fight that they go into thinking, hey, this could be my last fight in that weight class. And then the cut goes well and it prolongs their stay down there. And that isn't always advantageous. But, you know, you got a guy like Paul Felder who he literally, Kenny, has to measure everything he puts in his body for 6.5 weeks or so. And then you're still praying that you make 156 pounds on Friday and everything goes well during fight week. And I think Kevin Lee, right, if he was just as disciplined as Paul Felder, could it be a touch easier? But generally speaking, these guys are massive with not a lot of body fat. And as I mean, you can speak to this as well as anyone. You know, they're miserable. You know, like Paul Felder, we were calling fights 2 weeks ago in Toronto, like, dude, it's miserable.
Yeah.
You know?
And listen, I think you bring up a great point because I think that has a great effect on how well you do in your training camp and how well you do in your fight. Because if you are stressed all the time, right, not only is that going to get you to retain actually more water and not lose as much weight because of that cortisol that's going on in your body dealing with that stress, but you're not going to train as well. You're going to be more tense. You're going to be way more stressed on fight week like I was at 145 pounds. And it becomes all about getting on that scale and not about the fight. So, Yeah, I think there's a lot of lessons that can be learned from, let's say, the Frankie Edgars who fought at 155 with great success, and he even fought at 145 and could make probably 135. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of examples out there. Gunnar Nelson, who's fighting at 170, who could easily make 155. Guys that say, you know what, I don't want to deal with that stress. I want to be happy in camp. I want to be happy leading into a fight. I don't want to have to deal with all this crap trying to make weight when the real struggle, the real fight, is what you're going to encounter on fight night, on Saturday night.
Yeah, no, and I think a lot of guys like Kevin Lee, it's hard for them to quantify how much better they could be if they were able to enjoy training and enjoy training camp. Support for the Anakin Florian podcast comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. Let's talk about buying a home. It can be one of the most important purchases you will ever make. But today's fluctuating interest rates can leave you with unexpected higher payments, which can turn a great experience into an anxious one. That's why Quicken Loans created their exclusive power buying process. So here's how it works. They check your income, assets, and credit to give you a verified approval. This gives you the strength of a cash buyer, making your offer more attractive to sellers. Once verified, you qualify for their exclusive rate shield approval. They'll lock your interest rate for up to 90 days while you shop for your new home. Then once you have found the one, if rates have gone up, your rate stays the same. But if rates have gone down, you get to keep that new lower rate. So either way, you win. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. So to get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/ANIK, rocketmortgage.com/ANIK. Rate shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender license in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. All right, let's get to it. The greatest Ray Longo minute in the history of the show.
It's now time for the Ray Longo minute.
I want you to punch a hole in his fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo minute.
Starring Ray Longo.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
Well, if I did not love Ray Longo, I would not have made my first order of business when I started this podcast with Flo to put him on the show every week since April 6th of 2015.
You're a genius.
But I have never been more excited to see you or hear your voice. Ray fucking Longo, raging Ally Aquinta. Are you fucking kidding me, man? Congratulations to the whole team. I think this is as big a win as I've felt like you've had in 5 years. Just a huge win, and Flo and I cannot be happier for you, bud.
Yeah. Woke up this morning, got a blue moon in my eye, baby. But, I got to tell you, I really view this as a championship fight. I think that's the way we approach it. And it just had that feel, main event against an up-and-coming young kid, you know, brash-talking, you know, talented guy. It was just, what a great performance by Ally Aquinta, man. I got to tell you, it was great to see him get in there healthy and do his thing. And I got to tell you, you guys are talking about weight cuts. Look, even as a coach, I'm not happy until after the fight. Things could go so wrong within 24 hours with some of these guys. It's horrible as a coach to watch a guy go from I feel great to my knee, something's hurt. You know, like you start messing with your body like that, man, a lot of shit happens. It really does.
That's right. So making weight is one thing, then competing at the weight is another, right? You never know how that's going to turn out.
Totally correct. And, you know, as a coach, I'll do an interview where the guy feels great. I'm not kidding. Shit goes south in 48 hours. I mean, so it gets to the point I don't even want to talk. But luckily, man, I kept checking in with him like every half hour. How we do? You don't even want to be that guy because, you know.
Right.
You start bothering him, but man, this was one fight where it went good, thank God. And I got to tell you, training camp, we had to pull back a bunch of times because, his injuries, but it was just enough to get him healthy again. So I think we found the right recipe that way, which was good, which moving forward I think should help us because, you know, this kid would train 10 hours a day. He's not happy unless he's training like an animal, but, you know, those days might be behind him, but I think we trained smart and, man, what a just a great performance from Al, man. He hit a little adversity, and, man, I can't be happier for a guy. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's been, you know, so many ups and downs with not even, you know, like the fighting, just, you know, stuff with, you know, his complaints with the UFC and stuff like that. I actually texted Sean Shelby. I really got to give credit to Sean because Sean really – stuck by this kid and really, you know, saw the course. And I think it pays off. He just really wanted to get paid. And like Al told me, he goes, I just really want to thank Sean Shelby. That's what I want to do. I want to feel good about a fight where I feel like I'm appreciated. And that wasn't a bullshit thing. He really thanked Sean and Hunter Campbell. And, you know, it's almost like an inside joke. We know what's going on. But, you know, he I think they did the right thing by this kid. He's always produced in the spotlight. He's never let anybody down.
Listen, man, in addition to getting that win, he proved his worth. So, I mean, that was an amazing, amazing win. For you, Ray, when you look at his initial injury and when you got the news that his knee was pretty much destroyed, is this one of the greatest comeback stories in your career that you've experienced as a coach?
Without a doubt, Kenny, this is, you know, I gave a little speech at the after fight party. I watched this kid rehab, like his rehab discipline is phenomenal. He does the same shit over and over and over and over again just to stay within the range of training. I'm saying most people can't do that. And he, I mean, I just, you know, the hurt in his face, like he'd come in, even in this camp at the beginning, we'd hit for one round. I got to go. Like, my back is locking up. You know, it's just...
Wow.
And then he goes out. He just... I watch him with the rehab. He's surrounded by great people. He's got a Sports Science Institute and Staten Island. I want to give them a shout-out. Juan Delgado and John Piazza. He really loves these guys. They took a special interest in Al. I think that's the point of this. I think he's a crazy guy, right? He's not really that crazy, but... Al could go off the charts. I think he wears his emotions on his sleeve.
Yep.
And but there are people out there that have seen something in this kid, and without a doubt, me, one of them from the beginning, because I love him, that really have stuck by this kid when they could have went south a couple of times. You know what I mean? So he loves Piazza. He loves Juan Delgado. They stick by him. And it was a group effort. But, yeah, Kenny, great comeback. But I watched this guy... have the discipline to stay and rehab those injuries. I'm talking every day. He doesn't get in that ring before he does certain exercises. He comes out, he does them no matter what. It's just, it was great to see it, you know, come to fruition in a really high profile fight when he really needed it.
And Ray, one more question, you know, in regards to the fight itself, any surprises during the fight or did you expect this to kind of go down the way it did?
No, not really. I think it went down the kind of the way I did. I thought, no, I think it kind of went down the way I thought it would. You know, I think, I kind, you know, like even when Kevin Lee was talking about, he took the first fight on 3 weeks notice and Al told me they signed the bout agreements 2 months before the fight.
Yeah.
I was like, I just know he's going to beat him. There's something I like. Lee. He's a talented kid, but his head is something's off. Like, a little delusional, I think. And then I think it came back to bite him in the ass. Like, be careful what you ask for. Like, I think.
Right.
If anything, there was no evolution in his game. You know what I mean? Like, the projection that I felt during the fight is like, wow, this guy's real. Something's off, you know? And he seems like a good kid. He's got a good camp around him and stuff like that. But he's got a really. And he doesn't have to address anything physically because physically he's a gifted kid. But mentally, I think something's off. Like, really, like big time. Like even thinking you won that fight, like, I don't even care if you won that fight. You got your ass beat. Like, you know, if that's a straight fight, who do you think won that fight? Like, you want to win on this, like, eke out a sports decision because you had a couple of minutes of control time on the floor. Standing up, he was never, ever in that fight, ever. I mean, Al pursued him and pot shot at that kid all around the ring and I don't even know.
The main takeaway looking at that fight is Al Iaquinta is a fighter. Kevin Lee is an athlete.
Without a doubt. Kevin Lee, look, Al said the kid was super strong. He's definitely a gifted kid. He's got to get his head straight now.
Yeah.
And really, forget about the bullshit talking and all the stupidity. That's only going to get you so far. He's got to really go back in. He's a young kid. He's not going anywhere. I mean, definitely got the talent. But some of the things he was saying, I mean, man, I even looked at, like, people analyzing the fight. I was confused on this one. I was like, wow, nobody's putting any emphasis on what this kid did with Khabib. I think that was a telltale sign. This kid's not going anywhere. Al said it himself. Him and Khabib would still be fighting. Nobody was going to quit in that fight. You know what I mean? Like, this is the mentality you want out of a fighter. You know what I mean? So they kind of, I mean, he was such a huge underdog, which I'm glad because everybody made a lot of money. But he was such a huge underdog. For what reason? I really didn't get it. You know, like people were saying the guy's got a long reach. I've never seen one fight where that guy had a long reach. It's not like he's 6'2 and he's got a long reach. You know what I mean? He's got long arms, but he doesn't use them. He uses them for wrestling. That's why he can lock those hands behind your ass easy. You know what I mean? That helps him for there. But standing up wise, I didn't see any progression at all.
Well, you just gave me a million different things to chew on. I mean, at least as far as the betting line is concerned, they're trying to draw two-way action. And Al didn't necessarily have that signature win. He had just the Diego Sanchez win since 2015. So at least on paper, despite the fact that he had a win over Kevin Lee, I think that at least speaks to why the odds were pronounced. Not that I agreed with them at all, right? But as far as the performance,
let me just address that though. But I do think you got to put emphasis on that kid. I don't think anybody believes he took that fight on 24 hours notice, man. He trained for a 3-round fight.
Of course,
he went 5 rounds with a guy that's hammering people. And right. I'm going to tell you something: win or lose, you know, like there was a little controversy, but that Jorge Masvidal fight is a huge fight to look at.
Yeah.
Jorge Masvidal is a great fighter. I respect that guy a lot. That kid's a fighter. And Al was right. They were. I don't care who won the fight or who you think won the fight. It was a fucking fight. You know what I mean? And Jorge Masvidal's walking through a lot. You've seen what he does to people.
He's a beast.
You know what I mean? He's a beast. I mean, so I look. Who did, you know, Kevin Lee, when I looked at the Barboza fight, Kevin Lee got Barboza after the guy just got mauled by a grizzly bear. Like,
and he also got knocked down in that fight, and there were no doubt about it. The line is what it is. I in terms of the performance, though, see, we led the show, Kenny and I did, by suggesting that this is sort of the performance that allows Al to cross into the elite at least in terms of the public perception, right? Like he is an elite fighter, and even though maybe I'm not sure Kevin Lee underestimated him necessarily, I think we can all agree that Al is now a truly elite lightweight who on his best Saturday night can become the lightweight champion. What impressed you the most about what he accomplished Saturday night?
Look, again, I think what Kenny said, the way he had to overcome adversity with the injuries and then the way he had to overcome, you know, the guy had his back. He was never really close to doing anything. I think Matt Serra did a phenomenal job with that. We knew that going in. Matt was telling me, dude, his jiu-jitsu defense is excellent. He's got killers over there trying to choke him, you know, every day in the gym. And they do choke him sometimes. But the thing is, he's used to high-level guys attacking his neck. And that's what I think. I think Kevin Lee in his head thought he was going to take him down, get his back, and choke him. I think it was that easy. He thought, you know, I'm the biggest, stronger guy. I did it once before. I'll do it again. But Al was the guy that really evolved as a person. And to me, evolution is taking the things you should be doing it at a higher degree. You know what I mean? His timing on his punches was beautiful. His head movement was beautiful. His defense on the ground was beautiful. You know what I mean?
Man.
So there was a big evolution there. So I think, you know, I like the way we addressed everything going into that camp. That's why I said there was no surprises. And the way he was so poised when he was hunting him down, and he didn't overextend himself to get taken down, and just kept him at the end of those punches and just kept pot-shotting that guy around the ring. I mean, it was great. It was great to see. I think Felder did a great job because he's a stand-up guy. He saw a lot of the nuances that Al was doing, and he was trying to call him out on TV. I think he did a good job because there were a lot of body shifts and looking one way, going the other way. And he did a lot in that fight, man. That spin elbow was awesome.
Beautiful.
He did the head kick was phenomenal. He hasn't even thrown a kick in his last two fights, you know.
So when
he's healthy, he can go back to adding a couple of weapons. And I think his poise and his ability to stay the course and always look like he was in control of that fight, even when he was in a bad position,
I agree with that. I think that's the thesis statement right there. Even when he was in compromising spots, he felt like somehow, some way he was going to get out of it and was in control of the fight. Just a brilliant performance. And Paul Felder spent 8 weeks breaking down what Al was doing. You could be sure he had a lot of insight into the way Al moves, right? As a guy who prepared to fight him in April. So just in terms of the scorecards and anything else, I mean, certainly once you knew it was unanimous, you knew you had this decision. I didn't think it was a foregone conclusion. I don't know if it was round two or round three, but I thought you could have given Al one of those rounds, right? Because Kevin Lee didn't do a whole lot on the ground. And as you said, when they were standing, it was all Al, right? So when you heard, you know, 48-47, 49-46, I mean, you knew it was going to be for your guy.
Yeah, well, when I heard 49-46, I screwed up, I think, a little bit because I really thought he won that fight. I'm not saying easy because it was a competitive fight. Kevin Lee did a great job, but there was no question in my mind. The second round's tricky because I remember telling him that's the way to win back a round. You know, he hit a little trouble. Kevin did a little damage on the floor, but the last 2 minutes plus was Al chasing that guy around the ring again, you know, pot-shotting him. So damage-wise, there is absolutely no question who won that fight. Right. If you want to go control time, it gets a little tricky. I'm going to say the second round, if you're a Kevin Lee fan, you're probably going to give it to Kevin Lee. If you're an Al fan, you're definitely giving it to Al. But I made the mistake of – I thought it was a foregone conclusion that he won the first and the second. I gave Kevin Lee the third, and Al won the fourth and fifth.
Right. So you thought you had
one, 4-5 was clear. Yeah, 1-4-5 was absolutely clear.
4-5 was totally clear. Yeah. 1-4-5 was totally clear. 2, it depends on what you're looking at, I guess, you know, because I watched the fight again just to make sure I was right. So he had him down, never in any danger, but he got off a couple of shots. But I think when Al got back up, his shots definitely, you know, equalized whatever happened on the floor. That's what I was looking at. But you could go eat, like, again. But I got to tell you, MMA Junkie had him winning by 5 points. They gave him a 10-8 in the fifth round, which I don't agree with. But, dude, that was a pronounced walk-down beating, man. That way, even when he put his hands down, he still made a miss with his head. I mean, that's right out of a freaking movie. I mean, you can't make that shit up. And then, you know, when he screams at him at the end, same Al, buddy. Same fucking Al. You know what I mean? Like, you got to back your shit up now. I think that's the, when Kevin Lee says he's embarrassed, what's he embarrassed about? Is he embarrassed?
Because he said he was going to humiliate the guy, and he got humiliated.
Yeah, I mean, but because of his bullshit talking. That's what's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Everything you said came to bite you in the ass.
Right.
You know? One more thing before I forget, too. I love Milwaukee. I think it's a great city. People were beautiful. And a shout out to Duke Rufus, man. Always hospitable and lets us use the place. Treated those guys like gold. And, man, this guy can recommend Italian restaurants better than anybody, man. He gave us a great, great recommendation that we love. So, thanks. Shout out to Duke Rufus and everybody else at the Academy.
Yeah, Duke is a champion of a human being. I got to spend some time with him after the fights. Not a good night for Rufus Sport. They were 0-4. But, yeah, I think I ate at that same Italian joint. Best chicken palm of my life. Light on the cheese, though. Light on the cheese. So, again, anytime you have to go, you let us know. But I have a lot of notes on this fight, so I'm going to pick your brain for another couple minutes. Whatever the recipe was in terms of the cardio, the strength and conditioning, hopefully you can bottle that for the next training camp, because when I hear you talk about the details and how when he had to shut it down, he was able to shut it down, and yet still on this highest profile of fight nights, he was able to be the furthest thing from flat and go 10 hard fives if he needed to, or seemingly. You had to feel really good about the preparation resulting in that type of cardiovascular condition that late in a 5-round fight.
Yeah, without a doubt. Look, again, who do you think, if the fight went 3 more rounds, who do you think was going to be?
Oh, right.
I mean, think about it. But yeah, I think we found a recipe. We talked about it even after the fight. It was Al's ability to pull back when he wanted to keep training. But the mantra was, dude, you have to train healthy. I don't want no injuries, like nothing.
Right,
if you feel bad, we take a day off. It's not the end of the world. And for me, I kept beating into his head. You went 5 rounds with a grizzly bear, and you trained for 3. I mean, we're training now. I don't care where you think your cardio's at. It's 100 times better than it was that night. You know, but again, this is a kid that really trains his ass off. So we did have to pull back a little bit, but I think we trained smart, and it really paid off. I think we found a good recipe. Hopefully, we stick to it, and things could, you know, progress from here.
You proved that, yeah.
All right, last thing. So we launched this show in April of 2015. So your big three, Chris Weidman, Al Iaquinta, Aljamain Sterling, right? I want to give you some numbers. This is what I spend my day doing, right? Getting ready for the Anakin Florian podcast. So since we started this show, Chris Weidman, he's 2-4. Best win, in my opinion, Kelvin Gastelum, July of 2017. Aljamain Sterling, since we started the show, 6-3. Best win, Henan Barao, July of 2017. Ally Quinta has only fought three times, but he's 2-1 and had this win over Kevin Lee this weekend. I think this is the biggest singular win that we have had for you since we started this show. And I know you're not going to acknowledge it as such, right? And that night on Long Island with Chris Weidman was a special night. But this puts Al in championship contention. And given the backdrop and everything the Chemflow set up and what he dealt with, like, bro, like, this is a celebration today. I don't know what you're drinking. I know you're at the gym, right? But, like, this is, in my mind, this is the biggest win for Ray Longo MMA in the UFC in the 4 years we've been doing this show.
Well, I got to tell you, it certainly felt like that, for sure. But I think what I'm getting based on your numbers that you gave me, this fucking show is jinxed poor Chris Weidman. What the fuck did we do to that guy? You put the fucking horns on Weidman.
Does he have a voodoo doll in the background there, Ray? You know what is that?
You know what Weidman's going to do? He's going to force me not to do the fucking show anymore.
I know. I know. I'm sorry. You're right.
It's been good for Al, though. It's been good for Al, though, Ray.
It's been great for Al. Yeah. I'm telling you, Kenny, this had a championship feel for me. I almost want to say I got three champions now from the ground up. I really do. Yeah. That's how it felt for me. And my attachment to this kid is pretty close. So this is personal, man. It really was.
Yeah.
And just, I love, you know, when a guy's talking shit and you can go in there and just put a stamp like that. It's a good thing. But biggest surprise of the night for me was that his uncle Spike wasn't in the audience, Kenny.
Oh, yeah?
Come on, Kenny.
His Uncle Spike.
Oh, man, I'd throw you a layup.
Yeah, he has no idea what you're talking about.
I know.
He has a lot of pop cultural stuff up in that brain of his, but he has absolutely no idea what
you're
talking
about. Kenny, I'm going to tell you, about 10 o'clock tonight, you're going to sit back and you're going to be laughing.
I'll start laughing.
You're not even going to know what hit you.
You got to give me the context. Yeah, I'm clueless right now. It's too early.
Last thing, in terms of what is next for Ally Quinta, I know when he was with me in the Octagon after the fact, he called for a title shot, and he's certainly a guy who has earned that and is in that conversation, even though I think most people would like to see Tony Ferguson face Khabib. Ken Flo said he'd like to see Al fight Connor, you know, Dustin Poirier, Justin Gaethje, other guys that are in and around that area, Edson Barboza. What do you think is going to be next for Al?
Man, I'd love to see him fight Connor. I really would. Yeah. I think that's a great fight. Obviously, it's a money fight. You know, go back, do the Italian-Irish thing back in the fucking 50s.
Yeah.
You know, I think it'll bring back some good
MSG. Old, you know. Do it at MSG.
Do it at MSG, man. That place will go berserk. So yeah. I think it's a great fight for both guys. I really do.
Yeah. Let's just do it anywhere but New York, with all due respect.
Sure. I think Kenny just got the joke, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, he did. He did now. He got it.
Just hit him. Hit him. Look at him.
No, Conor Iaquinta.
Conor
McGregor, Ally Quinta, will do it in Las Vegas. We're not going to do it in New York. We'll do it in Las Vegas, and
let's do it.
Well, hey man,
Ireland.
Well, hey man, I'm really glad that I didn't see you after the fight, because I wanted to congratulate you here on the Anakin Florian podcast. And the next time we will talk to you, it will be New Year's Eve, December 31st. So next week we're just doing UFC 232 picks. I know you don't like predictions, so you will be off next week. Congrats on a huge fucking W.
After a big win like that, you're letting me go. I got a pink slip. Hey, listen, I'm gonna break some news to you. December 31st, I'll be at the Sayama, what arena is that in Tokyo with Suzuki?
Saitama Super Arena?
Oh, really? Yeah, baby, we're celebrating in Tokyo.
Oh, wow.
But I will, I will definitely call me. We'll definitely do it. It'll be
an
exciting
thing. Please send our best to Al and to Matt and everybody else. And congrats, man. You know,
congrats,
you guys did a great job. And I know Kevin Lee misses Robert Fallis on the other side. And you know, sometimes you guys don't seem to get the credit. And I think when you produce a win like this, people acknowledge the job that you guys do. And hey, man, pleasure's ours. Thanks for your time. Enjoy the W. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Hey, getting the credit or not, man, we're living life large and we love it, man. I don't care about credit, care about my guys winning. We all stick together and it's a great thing, man. It really is. So, it's good to get a little credit, but we know where we're at with everything. So
awesome.
It's all good stuff.
All right. Love it, buddy. Have a good week. Cash that check for me.
Thanks, guys.
See you, buddy. Ray Longo every week here on the Anakin Florian podcast. So you got guys at lightweight like Alexander Hernandez out there. And I think sometimes why people don't give Ally Quinta the credit he deserves going into a fight, whether it's a betting line or the experts out there. And you did kind of have to look around to find people that were picking Ally Quinta in this fight. But I think some of it is that he is an undersized lightweight who doesn't cut a lot of weight, who people see as a guy who probably could make 45, especially when you look at guys like Alexander Hernandez and the aforementioned Paul Felder and these guys who, I mean, dude, Dracar Close started his weight cut north of 200 pounds, Kenny, you know?
Insane.
So I think this is going to give Ally Quinta everything he needs to sort of move his career forward in an upward trajectory. But I think you can understand he does give up size in this division. There's no doubt about it.
Sure. He does, but again, you look at the energy that he brings, the conditioning that he brings, the toughness that he brings. Those qualities, in my opinion, are way more important than size.
No, I agree. In terms of quantifying the Robert Follis loss, right, and it's about a year to the day that Robert took his own life, and Robert's certainly a great corner man and a guy who knew how to maximize those 60 seconds, particularly on fight night. You know, Ken Flo, as in my mind the best analyst in the game, talks a lot about adjustments, right, and a corner's ability to make those adjustments. Bill Belichick coaches in the NFL. The NFL is all about adjustments. That's all it's about, right? It really is. And I think not having Follis with Dewey Cooper, not the most experienced mixed martial arts guy, and I think Corey Goodwin's the other guy in that corner, and again, a lot of good MMA people there, but I don't know. I just think for Kevin, it's hard to completely quantify that loss, but it's a big loss for him, particularly on fight night.
I think you make a great point. Robert Follis also really gave a lot of mental stability to his fighters with all of his experience and with his great motivational talks. This is a guy who had been in there so many times and had been a part of so many gigantic fights in the UFC. And I think throughout that training camp, giving that stability, giving that confidence to his fighters, giving him that ability to stay composed during a fight in between rounds is huge. It was a big loss for him, for Kevin Lee, in a lot of different ways.
All right. Ally Quinta with a monumental main event win, and we congratulate raging fucking Al. I mean, I still can't even believe the way he was able to do it, right? And say what you want about the scorecards and everything else, but, you know, you got up from watching that fight thinking that Ally Quinta had not handily, but had certainly done enough to beat Kevin Lee. And by the way, the breaking news from Ray, I guess, must be that Uluka Sasaki is no longer a UFC fighter and he's competing for one or something on New Year's Eve. That's like the other reference, who the fuck knows what he was talking about.
Yeah.
That's good. It kind of makes me feel young when all of my colleagues are younger than me essentially now. So that's good. Edson Barboza. Whew. What a striker, man. And, you know, I know this wasn't the most perfect performance. Even some of the people very close to him would acknowledge that after the fact. But this is one of the best strikers I have ever seen. And I am not, you know, a mixed martial arts expert, even though I watch a lot of it, right? But I marvel at the way this guy strikes, and I think when I'm 65 years old, God willing, I'm going to still be talking about a guy like Edson Barboza, because in a pure striking setting, you know, foot or hand to the target in a blink and then retreats defensively. I really liked what I saw this weekend against a guy in Dan Hooker who was, you know, dropping people left and right going in.
As far as, you know, the weapons, his offensive weapons, they are no doubt elite. The speed at which he throws those weapons, the timing that he has, the ferocity in which he throws them, his ability to hurt guys, it's tremendous. Edson is an absolute beast. He showed a lot of toughness in that fight against Dan Hooker. Dan Hooker showed the most amount of toughness, I think, that we've seen out of him, and one of the toughest and grimiest performances that I've ever seen in the octagon, period. This guy is an absolute beast, kept coming forward, even though he was taking a lot of punishment from the speedy Edson Barboza. But, you know, what worries me in Edson Barboza is that he hasn't changed as a fighter as much as I would like. He has so many great weapons and so many great physical gifts, but he doesn't find those proper angles. And sometimes his shot selection on what he should throw at the right time
kind of gets me shaking my head a little bit. I thought he should have been attacking those legs way more. I thought he was throwing a lot of risky shots, going to the body repeatedly with those legs. I don't know why he didn't go upstairs to try to take out Hooker once and for all with a head kick. But, again, I wasn't in there. A lot of times when you're feeling a fight, you feel something else. But for Edson Barboza, I think the main thing, though, is he's either going forward or he's going backwards. And if he doesn't hurt you, if he doesn't, like, hurt you with the shot, he doesn't really know what to do and starts to panic a little bit. And he makes the fight more difficult on himself because of it. So I think just finding a little bit more angles for himself, moving laterally better, I think will help him moving forward. Hopefully he's able to make those adjustments because, like you said, when he does throw those weapons, man, I'm not sure there's a better guy out there. Edson Barboza is just so damn fast and so explosive.
Right. And even though maybe there's some fight IQ issues, right, he's not a guy that a lot of people call out. I guess Dan Hooker notwithstanding, I think he did call for a fight against him, right? But not going to hear Ray Longo come on here, Kenny, and say, oh, give us Barboza, right? Like, he's not a guy that people want to fight, right? Like, I didn't even want to go near him after watching what he did to Dan Hooker this weekend. But, yeah, you bring up a lot of good points. The fight IQ is such that he put himself in a compromising situation against Dan Hooker when there was absolutely no need at any point for this fight to potentially be in jeopardy, as we saw the pendulum swing there mid-fight. So, absolutely, you hit on a lot of good stuff there. But another big win by knockout for Edson Barboza. He did not get a bonus, so, you know, maybe the UFC saw some of the things that you did. As far as Dan Hooker is concerned, and I sort of, as I called it, what popped into my head was be careful what you wish for, right? And I know Dan Hooker always wants the biggest fight to challenge himself against somebody in the top five. This did not go his way. Next level toughness.
Yeah.
Hard to quantify, Kenny, what this type of beating could do for him going forward. You know, he does have a lot of MMA miles relative to his age, even though he professes to train smart. But there were times when I thought the referee could have stopped this fight. There were times I thought the corner could have stopped the fight. I mean, when you were watching, are you sort of that mentality that Rob Hines had a couple of different opportunities where he, at least as the referee, could have jumped in there?
John, couldn't agree more. I was a little disappointed both in the corner and by the referee. I mean, listen, we've seen some amazing comebacks, right? We've seen a lot of toughness in the octagon from guys like Gaethje and Alvarez and Dustin Poirier, their ability to come back and battle back after dealing with a lot of punishment. But the amount of punishment that Hooker was taking in that fight without really giving any major damage to Edson Barboza, to me, there was no doubt of what was going to happen. We knew who was going to win that fight. And I think that we could have saved Dan Hooker from a lot of damage in that fight, both to his head and to his body. And again, I think you kind of have to have a different perspective heading into a fight. Yes, you want your fighter to win. Absolutely. But don't you want your fighter to be healthy, too? Don't you want your fighter to have a longer career? And those are the kind of fights that maybe can take away from those extra five or six fights. Not to mention maybe take away from his ability to function with his full capabilities later in his life. So
absolutely,
that's just not worth it. You have one brain, and a lot of times we forget that in the fight game.
Right. No, you're right. And, you know, he's going to be pissing blood for 3 weeks, right? And, of course, he would then throw his own offense, right, because he's just so tough and he wants to stay in the fight, even though there was nothing behind it. You know, at times you're like, oh, man, the referee should come in there. But then it's like, oh, wait, he's throwing offense. And it doesn't matter, you know, even though he's throwing offense. I still think there were windows in which you could have stopped this fight. And as far as the corner men are concerned, and I know there have been instances, as Paul Felder referenced, when Duke Rufus stopped, I believe, a Showtime Pettis fight recently. But generally speaking, high-profile corner men and women in these high-profile situations do not stop these fights, Kenny. They just don't do it. And until that starts to happen with more regularity, I don't think you're going to have anything resembling a trend. The rules say, technically, right, a corner man can't throw his towel into the octagon to stop a fight. Newsflash, if you throw your towel into the octagon, they will pause the action.
Right.
Then you can jump over the fence and give your fighter a hug. Okay, so it is very easy as a corner man to stop the fight. Just jump the fucking fence and say you're trying to save your fighter right now.
Yeah, exactly. And that, I believe, is where it comes from, by the way. So, yes, you're right.
Exactly. So now I understand there can be no worse reality for a corner man, and you're about to corner Ryan Hall in a couple weeks, then if you throw in the towel, so to speak, and you're in the locker room after the fight, and Ryan Hall says, Kenny, listen, man, I love you, but, dude, I haven't competed since 2016. Like, I don't know if I can have you corner me for my next fight because you fucking stopped this one, but, like, I have show and win money, and you just prevented me from having a chance to win that right. win money, and I've come back in fights before, and that would be one of the worst nights of your life. And sure. correct me if I'm wrong, but that's why people in your position, high-profile corner men, don't seem to be willing to pull that trigger.
Without a doubt. It is indeed a dilemma. And also, you got to deal with your fighter at the end of the day and kind of look him in the eye. But on the other side of things, you also have to look at health. And yes, that fight is extremely important to that guy. But if your fighter is taking an absolute beating and just the flow of the fight, it's just not going their way and it's only getting worse. And they've taken a lot of shots to the leg, a lot of shots to the body, and even more to the head, man, you got to look out for the safety of your fighter. That is your role, I think. Number one on fight night is to protect your fighter. And that's the role of the referee as well. It's the safety of the fighter.
Right.
Was the referee looking out for the safety of Dan Hooker? Sometimes you got to save a fighter from themselves a lot of times.
I agree.
I don't think that was the case. Dan Hooker proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that he's one of the toughest guys ever in the UFC.
Yeah.
But there was no need for it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And because it is so much easier said than done for a corner man to do what I just described, the onus has to be on the referee. And I think these people have to be encouraged to err on the side of a premature stoppage, right? They have to get safety back to the forefront of their minds. And Rob Hines is a good, experienced referee. He teaches the class for referees and judges, right? So I thought if anybody was in that situation, you know, other than, you know, all the elite guys like the no-nonsense Keith Peterson that we talk about on a regular basis here, I thought for sure Rob Hines would have found a window earlier to get in there and stop the fight. But maybe the referees have to save some of these corner men and women as well. Nonetheless, a big win for Edson Barboza. And thankfully for Dan Hooker, he was competing at 55 here and he was hydrated because otherwise – actually, who knows if it's thankfully, right? But at featherweight, he would have been knocked out this evening. Yeah. All right, anything else on the main card? Rob Font, I thought, a really clean performance. You know, he felt like he was going to be the bigger man, the stronger man, and even as the fight wore on, the faster man. Thought this was a clean performance against Sergio Pettis, and again, proves that he's a relevant, you know, top eight type bantamweight now moving into 2019.
Absolutely. Listen, I thought Rob Font had one of the best performances of his career. His jab was firing really well, which was setting up the rest of his strikes. But yeah, I mean, the size advantage for him was significant. He utilized it to the best of his ability against the smaller Sergio Pettis. I thought Sergio really struggled defensively in that fight. He just could not adapt to that long jab of Rob Font. Rob Font was throwing a variety of jabs. He was throwing a flick jab. He was throwing a step jab, a power jab, and Pettis was getting hit with pretty much all of them. And for Pettis, you got to move your head off that center line. Get that head moving. Utilize kicks. Utilize those long-range weapons, maybe a side kick or a front kick to deal with that longer jab from Rob Font. And he just couldn't get it going, man. And I think that he really struggled and was frustrated by those strikes from Rob Font. I thought Rob Font was mixing things up very well with his takedowns as well. He was winning rounds because of his ability to be a little bit more versatile than Sergio Pettis.
Yeah. Nice job by that corner, Joe Lauzon, Tyson Chartier as well. Rob Font's got a good thing going. You know, he drives so much, Kenny, to train. Drives to Lauzon's in southeastern Massachusetts. Drives to the University of Southern Maine three times a week for wrestling. You know, that's a two-hour drive, right? Like, he's really committed to this thing, and he's a really good kid, and I do feel good for him. And on the other side, you know, Duke Rufus did say to me after the fact, you know, maybe Sergio shouldn't have taken a fight so soon. You know, this was 9 weeks after that loss to Juicy A Formiga, and Sergio seemed pretty hell-bent on competing in Milwaukee, but quick turn, moving up a weight class against one of the better fighters in that division. A lot of people kind of felt like maybe Sergio had bitten off more than he could chew against Rob Font, and that's kind of the way it played out. And then Charles Oliveira, Kenny, when you talk about the great offensive jiu-jitsu guys in UFC history, Charles Oliveira is that guy right now. 12 career wins by submission in the UFC. Nobody has more, and man, did he just make it look easy against a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt.
He really did. You know, Jim Miller has certainly lost a step. He's had a lot of fights in the UFC, a lot of great fights in the UFC, and he's had a lot of success. One of the toughest guys to compete inside the octagon as well. But you could see Charles Oliveira was just much faster, you know, you see Miller not reacting very well to the takedown, to the back take. Oliveira was just all over him, man. As soon as he had that back early in that first round, you knew it was pretty much going to be over. You don't want a guy like a Charles Oliveira on your back early in the first round like that. Right. And, you know, Oliveira is really improving and seeing, he just looks way more comfortable in the octagon now. He owns that cage. He owns that space. And the fact that he has broken Hoist Gracie's record for most submissions in the octagon is just amazing. In 2018, right? It'd be one thing if he did it maybe early 2000s, late 90s. He's doing this in 2018, and it's showing that Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is still very much alive and well as far as the mixed martial arts realm is concerned. So, awesome win for him. And again, to come back, I believe Jim Miller, submitted him with a leg lock back in the day?
A knee bar in 2010,
So that was an awesome performance there from Oliveira.
I'm so glad you set up the context of what Charles Oliveira has done in relation to Hoist Gracie, because you're right. It's like doing it in the sort of the salary cap type era, doing it nowadays.
Yeah.
When people are so good at submission defense and so focused on submission defense, even if they don't have more than a couple chokes in their offensive arsenal, you know?
Jim Miller's a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Not all black belts are created equal, but this is a guy who has submitted a lot of guys himself. So it's not like he's just going, you know, submitted some guy who's a professional kickboxer, you know?
Right. But yeah, right. But the MMA application of the offensive Jiu-Jitsu for Charles Oliveira, and I asked him about moving back to featherweight in our post-fight interview, because every time I do my phone call with him on Tuesday, we do the fighter calls, he talks about featherweight, right? And he weighed in at 152 pounds for this fight, right, as if to sort of make a statement, you know? Because there are guys, Chad Laprise, you know, other guys who maybe want to compete in a certain weight class, but the UFC says, you know, you've really got to prove to us that you can do it. I don't know if they'll let him go back down to featherweight, but I think he even realizes that at lightweight, it's just going to be hard for him to break through and complete the mission. Whereas he feels like if Max Holloway, a guy he had a main event against back in 2015, feels like that maybe is more palatable for him. All right, last thing, just sort of putting a bow on this whole corner man discussion. So one of the prelims, Kenny, Joaquim Silva was a winner by knockout over Jared Flash Gordon. Jared Gordon, one of the best people I've met in MMA, and it's an amazing story that we tried to outline on the broadcast. His drug addiction, his overdosing on multiple occasions and coming back to get a second chance, you know, family business burned down in a fire. He's dealt with a lot of things. And against Neto BJJ, Kenny, at the end of the second round, Neto BJJ was attempting a knee bar and he tore Jared Gordon's hamstring, right? So Jared Gordon limps back to the stool, and Duke Rufus said after the fact, you know, I sort of wish I had stopped the fight because I knew his hamstring was compromised, and then I allowed the guy to get a pretty bad concussion, because the end of the fight, Jared Gordon was literally out on his feet. Like, he was out cold standing on his feet. But again, it comes back to that conversation that, you know, Jared Gordon, if any fighter on this roster, to a man, to a woman, wants to continue in that fight, it's Jared Gordon, right? And like, even on one leg, he feels like he can knock out Joaquim Silva. And he landed big power shots in the third round and nearly was able to come back and win. So it's just such a fine line. And I don't know that you can fault Duke in that situation. But certainly if retroactively these guys keep having regret, then maybe they'll pull the trigger at some point in the not too distant future.
I agree. I'm not going to pretend that I watched that fight, so I can't really put it into context as well as you did. But you know, listen, I'm always of the belief that if you're sending your fighter out there on one leg, the other guy better be on at least one leg as well.
Right,
you know,
if
you're sending out your fighter and he's on one leg, his leg is messed up or compromised in some way, shape, or form, and the other guy has his full capacities, you're sending your guy out to slaughter. And it's not worth it. Save your fighter. You know, you can do things if you have a broken hand or, you know, something's going. But with the legs, I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. And again, Duke Rufus also, he knows Jared Gordon better than I certainly do, and knows what he's capable of. But I think if he's saying that after the fight, he maybe should have stopped that fight.
Yeah. And you know what else is interesting? That Jared Gordon won the $50,000 fight of the night bonus. right? So there's that for too, that. Right?
Yeah.
And you can argue that a big chunk, if not all of that bonus, was earned in defeat in that third and final round, as great as the fight was leading up to it. So a lot of layers to it.
For sure. And then I guess I would counter by saying this, and this is whatever, and this is not for you, this is really for every corner, myself included. Is the $50,000 worth it for the concussion?
Right, right. Well, right. If it makes you feel any better, I've been hospitalized with two concussions in my life, and
basketball.
I
remember you told me that one.
Yeah.
What?
And I didn't get a dime.
We
for
still
got.
We
got
to track that dude down. By the way, one of these days.
We do, Ken Flo. You got to track that guy down.
Yeah.
And I'll just say in closing that I'm not a fighter. Right. These are just a fan, essentially having his opinions, having watched a shit ton of this stuff.
Sure.
But hey, you know, I'd probably be that corner man that forever jeopardized his friendship with his fighter by throwing in the towel because I'm a pussy. You know.
Well, you're looking out for their well being, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Soft, Kenny. I'm grape soft. 40 years old. All right, that's it for today. Thank you to Ray Longo. Thanks to our Fox Sports crew, as always. Next week, it'll be an abbreviated show for you, probably. We'll close out our 2018 main event challenge. Going to be seven picks for UFC 232, Jones versus Gustafson 2. That is coming up Saturday, December 29th on pay-per-view prelims just beforehand on FS1. And hopefully everybody's ready to enjoy some holiday time with their family between now and then. We will talk to you again in less than a week. Until then, for Ken Flo, I'm John Anik. Thank you all for listening. Yo, late.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.